When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, I'm Scott Soschnick.
And I'm Evan Novy-Williams, and this is the Chelsea's Finally Been Sold sports business podcast, The Sportacast.
I thought this would be the together again, you know, reunited. On the road again, reunited. Yeah, but no, I was in California and Miami. We'll get to that in a moment because we all know what was going on in Miami. You, sir, I can see from the sun coming through your window, you are not in New Jersey or New York. You are in Aruba, as you said.
The Sportacast is truly an international podcast, Scott.
Absolutely. Now, I feel like the way I said Aruba, I got to take it to that next level from whatever the movie was. Do you scuba?
Do you scuba? Yeah, that's scuba? Life Aquatic. Yeah.
That was Life Aquatic. Is that what it was? You scuba? Yeah, I love that. All right, you went ahead and wrecked it at the top. Yes, we finally have a decision on Chelsea Football Club. And the final answer is Todd Boehly, of course, part owner of the Dodgers, part owner of the Lakers. Now, of course, the face of Chelsea Football Club upon completion, of course, backed by lots of money from Clear Lake Capital, other investors as well. Evan, the choices were Josh Harris, David Blitzer, Steve Pagliuca, Todd Boehly. I am not surprised, and I'll tell you why after I ask you. Are you surprised, and why? Why not?
I'm not surprised. Real quick, bit of log rolling for you, Scott. You are the one who broke this news on Friday evening. So for all the people, journalists around the world that have been covering this, you would have heard it first from Sportico via Scott Soschnick that the Boehly Group was successful. I'm certainly not surprised, Scott, given that last week he was named as the preferred bidder. It seemed like that was a kind of a fast track of some sort of kind of exclusivity.
Wait a minute. Did you really justify the not surprised by saying he was named preferred bidder? I meant at the start.
Okay.
Well, so after he was named preferred bidder, I was not surprised.
Yes. So even going beyond that, no, I'm not necessarily surprised here. We've talked a bit about the types of investors who have been investing in European soccer over the past decade and the reasons why it certainly seemed as though this Chelsea sale was going to go a different direction in terms of who those investors might be. Boehly is a very well-respected and well-connected investor. As you mentioned, Scott, other people in his group include a Swiss billionaire named Hans-Jörg Weiss, a local real estate mogul named Jonathan Goldstein, and then the big one, Scott, Clear Lake Capital, which we can get into in a second, from what I understand, putting up the majority of the money here. This is a deal that comes with obviously some requirements on spending. I know that one of the things Roman cared about was making sure that whoever owned this team next understood that it was a property that was to compete with Bayern Munich and Barcelona and Real Madrid and not a team that was going to spend less and make more money. So no, I'm not necessarily surprised. I was a little bit more surprised, I think, that the final couple bid groups outside of Jim Ratcliffe were all American investors. But I think that this is a fairly logical conclusion. I mean, do you disagree?
No, but I mean, I'll bring some real logic in it. And having watched Josh Harris bid for other properties like the New York Mets when he was bidding against Steve Cohen, at the end of the day, I mean, Josh's bid, and I don't know how often, if we've even talked about this, in reality, Josh's bid for the Mets was like $1 billion below Steve Cohen. He's a value investor. Like he has to see it pencil out. I never thought from the beginning that Josh would pay whatever it took to get Chelsea as a trophy asset. Now, Steve Pagliuca, part owner of the Celtics, I could see him doing it if it made sense, but I also see him saying, I need to know where all this money is going. You know, is it really going to charity? What's left open? Is Abramovich going to try and take the money out? Is that asking all of those questions and being hesitant with any uncertainty, which left me with Todd Boehly, willing, I think, to spend to get the trophy asset as part of the portfolio. Again, utilizing a lot of other people's money. But it just left me as he would be the likely person to make it happen because of those factors.
And not just spend to buy the asset, spend to keep the asset.
Well, yeah, you said something funny before. Yeah. You said, yeah, like you said, make more money. Roman, you know, said, well, you gotta, you know, you have to spend whatever, just not just to make more money. And I think the appropriate term or the accurate term is lose less money, right? This thing loses $150 to $200 million a year. But you and I both know, and we're going to go to the Sam Kennedy principle here, that these are platform companies. And we've seen it time and time again when prospective bidders come in on properties. If it's turnkey, they ain't interested, or they're not as interested unless there's a media opportunity or a real estate opportunity. And there is a massive real estate opportunity here with Stamford Bridge, but they don't control the asset, and you're going to have to spend $1.5 billion, $2 billion to build a new stadium. And but as we've seen with a lot of the newer facilities, that they mimic cash registers. You know, you bring that sort of American marketing to the sport in the UK, and I'm sure Todd sees a way where he can really utilize the real estate play as a way to make more money.
Yeah, and to put that kind of in perspective about why, because people ask me all the time, why would you buy an asset for $3+ billion when you're going to lose $100 million a year? They obviously appreciate a lot. Look at what happened with Roman Abramovich. In 2003, Scott, he paid $230 million to buy Chelsea. What a deal, by the way. As you mentioned, this is a team that lost money almost every year he owned it, and lost significant amounts of money, sometimes upwards of $200 million. He invested personally a couple billion dollars, lent it to the club for it to cover some of those losses. But flash forward 18 years of ownership, he's selling this thing for $3 billion. So take the $230 that he paid, take the $2 billion that he put in on debt that maybe he's not getting back from a profit when they divvy up what is actually being paid here. But no matter what, he made money on this. I think that is the thing that Todd Boehly's group and all the other groups that were bidding on Chelsea were looking at. They were thinking, we're going to have to cover losses year in and year out. But if 10 years or 10 or 18 years down the line, in Roman's case, if we do go to sell it, I think it's a good bet that we're going to get our money back.
Yeah, you know, you got to pencil out the length of time and the annual losses. Clearly, you know, Todd has a strategy. We have not been privy to that strategy, and I'll put uppercase yet. I'm fascinated. You know, should we do the look ahead, the now what for Chelsea? What's the path forward? You know, whether or not the principals choose to share their roadmap with us or not, there are plenty of people we could talk to say, what's the way forward? And do you believe, and we've done this a number of times, Chelsea versus Denver Broncos, and we'll get to the Broncos in a minute, right? Do you want the Broncos at $4 billion, 4.2, 4.4, whatever it may be, knowing you're going to put $100+ million in your pocket every year? Or do you want Chelsea? Now we saw the number, 5+ with all the promise of reinvestment. Over the long term, which property has a better chance at being a $7, $9, $10 billion asset? Do you believe the NFL and its plan for global growth? Or are you banking on a dominant brand in the sport that is already the world's most popular? Those are two different avenues you could take. And I'm not sure which way I'd go. You know, maybe it really does depend, just like any other investor. What's your appetite for risk, right? The NFL would be a certificate of deposit. You know, I know what I'm going to get. It's safe. It's there. Or I guess with inflation the way it is, I think the de rigueur investment right now is the I-bond. Have you read about this? You know, guaranteed almost 10%. Yeah, go look up on the I-bond. If you have a spare 10K, you may want to put it into an I-bond. Guaranteed almost 10%.
Hello.
Yeah. Go look it up. I hope catch. I taught our. I hope no.
It's a rare cryptocurrency.
Yeah. But you're limited to 10,000, and you and spouses you can each do it, and you're guaranteed You have to leave the money there for a year, which I'm sure you're okay with. You know, somebody just flushes you. What's the big deal? You don't spend money. I see you the way you eat in the office every day. You're
fair.
Your salad, your sandwich, or your granola. You're good. So yeah, but it's just a risk reward analysis. What are you willing to risk? And do you think it'll be a big payoff?
And to put the number, just a little bit of context around that number, you mentioned the top line, $5.24 billion, that includes about $2.16, that is commitment, $1 billion, commitment to spend on the team moving forward. Puts the price paid for the team around $3.1 billion. Scott, it's not quite a record for a sports franchise. When Josiah closed his deal for the Brooklyn Nets and operating rights to the Barclays Center back in 2019, I believe it was $3.3 billion was the valuation there. But one of the highest prices ever paid for a sports franchise. And as you said, we'll get into the Broncos sooner. I believe both of those numbers will be eclipsed at some point in the coming months or weeks by whoever it is that ends up with the Broncos.
All right. As you know, I do like soccer, grew up playing soccer. Who is my favorite soccer player? Let me see how well you know. How well have you listened? Do you know who's my favorite soccer player?
Yeah, I feel like it's like Franz Beckenbauer or something like that.
Well, Der Kaiser? No, not Der Kaiser.
I was
going to
say, I thought it was a German. Yeah.
Well,
Didier Drogba.
Didier Drogba. Mm, there you go. Yes, you know, I love Drogba, and I was so excited when we got a chance to see him play when he played for Montreal and they came and played Red Bull. And here, you know, here's the drum roll. My son got to walk him out on the field.
Yeah.
You know, and for those who don't know the story about the focus group of one, I love this. I told him, you know, it was sort of arranged ahead of time. I was given a little sneak peek that, hey, we can't arrange anything, but tell your kid to be last in line because Drogba is going to come out last today. Got a little intel, right? A little insider information. Tell your kid to wait. So, of course, right in that area, right before I have to leave him, I'm like, dude, just wait. They're going to say, okay, everybody go line up. I want you to wait. Be the last person online. I mean, literally, Eben, not 2 seconds goes by when the person running the thing says, okay, let's go, everybody. My kid shoots to the front. And I had a choice to make because, you know, in this Facebook world, like I had to have the shot, right? It's not good enough that it happened. I have to make sure the world knows it happened, at least on this one. So I kind of shimmy underneath the rope. I go to the front. I grab him and yank him to the back of the line. I'm like, wait here. And you should have seen his face when, you know, he's waiting there looking, the players start coming out. And then last in line, as promised, there's Drogba. And he puts his arm around him. My son had a mohawk at the time, kind of rubbed his hand in his hair. And he looked up like Hercules himself was standing there. And by the way, he had no idea who Didier Drogba was, but I had built him up and then, you know, escorted him on the field and stood there during the anthem. Fantastic stuff.
Let's transition then, Scott. I love that story. It's fantastic. You were in Miami for a different sport, glitz and glamour of the F1 race. Asla Pellet and I, our colleague, broke it down on Thursday heading into the race, but I would love to hear your thoughts. Everyone I know who was down there seemed to say that it was different from a hospitality standpoint, a different kind of sporting event than almost anything that they had ever seen before, including F1 races and other fairly glitzy and glamorous places.
Well, having never attended Monaco, I can't speak to that, but it was clear that there was an event in town. It was clear that something different, a spectacle was around because there were pop-up restaurants like Carbone on the beach. And, you know, you just kept reading about these things and seeing the posters. It was clear that something different was happening. So
you've been in Miami for Super Bowls, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I've been for multiple Super Bowls. Yeah.
How different did Miami feel for F1 weekend versus how Miami feels for Super Bowl weekend?
Different. People were talking about it. Like it's just like the people who came for the Super Bowl just kind of, all right, it was there. But this was on everybody's top of mind. It was just what people were discussing. You went out to eat or the race was everywhere. You just kind of felt it. And whether or not it lived up to the hype or lived up to expectation I don't know. But we did host a roundtable discussion at a lovely mansion on the Intercoastal with our friends over at Rob Report. And Greg Maffei, the CEO of Liberty, of course, the parent of F1, was there. Zach Brown, the CEO of McLaren, David Coulthard, commentator, former driver. And boy, the optimism, just from all of them, the optimism about the growth of the sport, the attention of the sport, where it's headed, the promise of the U.S. marketing and all the marketing dollars here for the sport. And I said, what's the risk? What, you know, and Greg, you know, like any good CEO, he didn't say, oh, there's no risk. He said, well, this is what I watch and this is, but it's clear that they believe there are significant inroads already made and many more to come in the United States.
I mentioned this stat last week when talking to Asla, that there's 22 races on the F1 calendar. The U.S. is one of only two countries right now that the F1 will stop in more than once this year. And that's before we add next year, Scott, the Las Vegas event that we've talked about, where they're racing down the strip right in front of the famous hotels, casinos, and fountains. So clearly, yes, a big opportunity here in the U.S. And I wasn't sure exactly what to expect from this. And it's funny, I felt like I read so much about this race even afterwards before I even realized who won, that it almost seemed like, more so than most events, the winner of it, which was Max Verstappen, I believe, was so much secondary to the whole. So it's funny, I was tweeting about this earlier. I went to Monday morning, I went to ESPN.com, with ESPN televised here in the US, went to ESPN.com to see who won. If you clicked on the homepage, I didn't get it anywhere on the top stories, anything on the left. Then I clicked on the ESPN's F1 page, the F1 landing page. And of the six or seven featured stories on the right, none of them mentioned who the winner was. I had to scroll down even on ESPN's F1 page to find who the winner is. It does certainly feel like F1 is kind of almost singular in the way in which people consume the sport, the winner on the track being maybe not as important as just the X's and O winner in a lot of other sports.
Yeah, well, I mean, it sounds like somebody goofed, frankly. Because not only is F1 shown on, I mean, the race was on ABC, but the Disney family of networks, but that contract is up for renewal very soon. And I mean, you'll remember when the NHL was not on ESPN, you couldn't find it on the homepage. Then they get the contract back and it's everywhere. You know, of course, that's how you treat the property you're trying to court or you have. So I really think somebody just might have goofed, believe it or not, because like Max Verstappen should have been all over that front page. And I asked, of course, Greg Maffei and the others about sort of the drive to survive. And by the way, you'll be glad to know it was 3 minutes and 22 seconds into our little roundtable discussion before the word Netflix was uttered. I was timing it and I stopped the proceedings to let everybody know it was 3 minutes and 22 seconds. I probably would have bet the under that somebody would have said it before that, but that's how long it took for Netflix to be uttered. About just sort of the fans who enjoy the drama of the reality show, but are not race fans come Saturday. And he said, well, believe it or not, Scott, like we haven't seen many of those. Like, and again, I brought up my family watched the show, but have not been converted into Saturday or Sunday morning race fans. And he said, well, that's not what we've seen across the board, frankly. And I spoke to plenty of other people, and I know this is not, you know, empirical data, but they've become hardcore watch parties, you know, almost like the EPL on Saturday morning. And so, you know, they think they've just really tapped into a new, growing, loyal, affluent, all the great things that you want for sponsors and potential advertisers.
And fantastic timing for F1 for this US boom to be happening right as the US TV rights, which were with NBC for a while, NBC essentially gave them up to ESPN. Perfect timing for F1 to be hitting the market in the US now with all of this momentum behind it here in America. Scott, let's move on to another one. Some news that we broke over at Sportico last week on the Broncos. Now the most important and biggest, most competitive sports franchise up for auction right now. We know who a series of the bidders are, but a new high profile person just joined the group led by Josh Harris, and that is Magic Johnson. Someone who has, he's an investor in the Dodgers. He's an investor in the Sparks. He's someone who has had a very successful business career on the heels of his very successful basketball career. We're at that stage where we were with Chelsea maybe about a month ago now, Scott, where the bid groups, we know who are leading most of them. Now they're starting to beef up their consortiums. Who's effective? Who's helpful for me, not only to provide capital, but also maybe to provide expertise, to provide a public face for the bid? And Magic Johnson certainly feels like he can fill a few of those buckets.
Yeah, but so much interests me about the Broncos deal. I mean, we could do an entire show on it alone. But here's the question I have for Magic. And I wanted to pose it to him, but I didn't get the chance yet. Why would he align himself with one of the bid groups? And I guess his answer could be, I believe in Josh, and he's been, you know, great owner with the Sixers and the Devils. And, you know, also Rob Walton probably doesn't need anybody in his bid group, right? It's because it is a trust sale. And you wrote about this, that there's a fiduciary responsibility that what will guide the sale is the highest price, not necessarily who do we think is the best owner? Just this is going to go to the highest bidder. I guess if Josh is unsuccessful, Magic could approach whoever does win the bid and say, hey, as you know, I'm interested to be a part of this group. But others who, of course, have a certain gravitas in the area, last name, surname Manning, are sitting it out right now. They are not aligning themselves. Like Peyton Manning is not aligning himself with a bidder. What will happen here is they will go through the process, a winner will be declared, and then Peyton Manning will say, hey, I'd love to be a part of this group. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Magic, when the Dodgers were sold, he took sort of the tact of, I'm really important, right? I'm important in LA. People like me. They're angry at the team. They're angry at outgoing owner Frank McCourt. I'm a really good person to have in your group. People love my smile. So he interviewed prospective bidders. Like, it was really... Normally, we've said this before, normally it's the people with the money who do the interviewing. Magic was the one doing, he was the one summoning people to his desk and saying, why should I align myself with you? So, as we've discussed also, the NFL is looking for diverse groups in its ownership ranks. Of course, they cannot mandate, and there is this loggerheads at this point of, does it matter? Do you need diversity? Do you need people of color in your group if you're the high bid? Right? It's clear, though, the NFL has told everyone, we would really like it if the ownership group contained people of color.
Yeah, I think that all those things are exactly right. To your question about why Magic might do this now, I mean, it's obviously hard to answer that without knowing kind of the deal terms of what his agreement with Josh Harris looks like. To go back to the Dodgers for a second, back in 2011, when the Dodgers were up for sale, he joined, as you mentioned, the ultimately successful bid led by the Guggenheim partners. He put in about $50 million, which was good enough for 2.3% of the franchise right now. So again, he's not coming in and likely with the Dodgers, same, or the Broncos, the same thing. He's not coming in with a big stake here for the Broncos, but he does have a lot of experience here in all the things you mentioned with the Dodgers, being the public face of it, bringing in potentially new partners. All of those things seem like they are potentially valuable. Scott, if you can give an update on how far along you think this process is. We know there are at least five groups that have reached quote unquote second stage. One of them led by Rob Walton, one of the richest men in the world. Another one led by Josh Harris, this group that we're talking about with Magic Johnson. Another one led by Todd Boehly. And the obvious question there, Scott, on the Boehly one, he just made a very successful bid for Chelsea. Going to cost him a lot of money. Would you be surprised to see him still in the Broncos bid? Would you be surprised to see him back out of the Broncos bid? How much do you think does he have both the capital and the financial and the interest and the wherewithal to be going after the Broncos while knowing that he just added Chelsea?
Yeah, I'm sorry, what was your question?
Two things. Give us an update on the timing and number two, what do you expect from Boehly here?
I'm going to go back to the movie references. Remember Back to School? I have but one question in 27 parts. One, timing, I think we're getting a very clear picture. Management meetings were first week of May. We're getting close to sort of your, okay, let's get your second round number in mind, and whether that's a best and final, I'm not sure, but we're getting there. Yeah. Now that Chelsea's out of the way, we're getting there. Would I be surprised if Todd Boehly bids on the Broncos too? And now that he's secured, Chelsea? No, I would not be surprised if he stayed engaged in the Broncos. He's got a ravenous appetite for this stuff. And again, it's part of global portfolio. Like, and if you can add the NFL to any portfolio, there's your crown jewel, right? I mean, Chelsea's one, and this would be 1A, or they're both 1A. They're just crown jewels in any sports portfolio. You can do a lot with an NFL team. So no, I would not be surprised. What was the other? Were there other questions there?
No, I think that kind of summed up. To me, Peyton Manning is kind of in a class of his own here in terms of these kind of celebrity minority LP partners.
Well, what it feels like Elway?
And John Elway maybe as well. It seems like if you're talking about the class of Magic Johnson, maybe now is the time to start thinking seriously about if I want to hitch my wagon to somebody, I maybe have to make a decision soonest. Maybe he and Josh aligned on some feelings he had about philanthropy of the team or community outreach of the team. I think there's a lot of things in there that could have swung his decision one way or another. It is interesting to me that, you know, we talked about the Dodgers. Todd Boehly, obviously a very principal part of that Guggenheim partners bid to win the Dodgers. He is also a bidder here in the Broncos, as we're talking about, but Magic ended up in a group that was not his group. So there's so many kind of interconnected business relationships here. But I do think that, much like we saw with Chelsea a few months ago, with people like Serena, with Lewis Hamilton, we're now, I think, at that point with the Broncos that we're going to keep hearing, I think, maybe potential new big names, some celebrity names that are pairing up with some of these groups moving forward.
As long as you break it, I'll be happy with it, right? I mean, but this is why we do what we do.
We can.
It's soap opera every day. He is Eben Novi Williams on assignment from Aruba. Are you going to go like outside beach? Be honest. You going to work, hopefully, or are you going outside beach?
Maybe dip my toes in the sand while working on some stories and some emails.
All right. On the Twitter at @Novi_Williams. I am Scott Soschnick. On the Twitter at @Soschnick. Matt Whitehurst is our more than capable producer. Thank you for all you do, Matt. Our digital media editor is Cora Veltman. She loves it when I remind you that the show can be found at Sportacast, which is the hub of what will very soon become, I'm working on it, people, working on it, not easy, the Sportico Media Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.